Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on antibiotics when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, the multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property, not the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights? Not to someone who is indifferent thereto. And that's because it's a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. And it can't be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. It's valid only when insisted upon by you, the belligerent claimant in person. So says U.S. versus Johnson. That's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. So did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or your solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant, in person. So for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining. And it's educational, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, we're talking about antibiotics last time, and the story that I read is an 11-page article. I didn't give you the source of it. It comes from www.wired.com, and it comes from the Wired Archive 15.02. Again, that's www.wired.com, and then /wired/archive. It's an 11-page document. Now, the soldiers over in Iraq all volunteered to go over there. There's no draftees over there. They're all enlistees, not draftees. So, when one of them gets killed over there, he becomes, in law, what we call the proximate cause of his own injury. He can't sue and say, well, you know, you put me in harm's way. He put himself in harm's way. And all of these young people that have gone over there went over there for some reason. I don't know what it is, but, you know, they wanted to serve their country, or they wanted to get a college education off of the military. There's a lot of benefits that you get for going over there to Iraq. And when you stop and think about it, the casualty rate over in this Iraq war over here is minuscule compared to Vietnam or Korea or World War II. Minuscule. And 9 out of 10 battlefield casualties survive. 9 out of 10. It's a phenomenal record, if you stop and think about it for a moment. First of all, not very many casualties to start with. Secondly, the medical process that they put these people through, or that they use over here to save their lives, is something that's been unheard of in the history of warfare, and it's unheard of in the history of the world. So from that perspective, it's pretty good. But I reported to you on the story because there's a foible in the process. we depend upon antibiotics. We believe, at least here in America, we believe in antibiotics more than we believe in God himself. Now, we not only believe in evolution, but we believe in our modern medicine, that medicine is the cure-all. Medicine will solve all of our problems. And up until now, you know, that's been pretty true. Up until now. Well, I should say up until the last 20 or 30 years. Because the mainstay of modern medicine is the antibiotic. The antibiotic is like tires on a car. It's just always there, and it always has to be there, because without tires on the car, we don't have transportation. So we rely upon these antibiotics. If for some reason we got cut off from our tire supply, if we couldn't get tires for our cars, you know, that would pose one whale of a problem. Just picture the automobile industry without tires, and then ask yourself, well, how long could that go on? I mean, we could still have cars, I guess, running around on rims, but that wouldn't be nearly as good as the automobile running around on a tire. Now, the same thing, I think, is going to be the case now with these antibiotics. And antibiotics are coming to an end. They're not just mutating and changing into something better. They're coming to an end, and there isn't anything to replace them with. And we've used them very poorly over the last 70 years. They were discovered back in 1928. Today, they're so pervasive in our society here in America, we just dump them by the tons right into our livestock, cattle, and poultry feed and feed it right to the chickens, the pigs, the cows. And as a result of that, we are becoming antibiotic resistant. Now, there's still two or three antibiotics. They call them broad-spectrum antibiotics that can cure just about any disease. But there's probably 20 or 30 of these antibiotics out there. I didn't count them up. I don't know that there's 20. I don't know that there's 30, but there's a bunch of them. For instance, there's penicillin. That was the first one. And then there's erythromycin, terramycin, dehydrostreptomycin, and there's a whole list, you know, and I've read some of them to you here. So I'm going to guess that there's 20 or 30. There's a bunch, however many there are. And as a result of that, each time some particular pathogen has developed a resistance to an antibiotic, they've come along with another antibiotic that would kill that pathogen. So that's been what we've been working on over the last 50 years. Every time one of them becomes resistant to it, we come up with a new one. Now, the researchers tell us there's a limit to how many of these antibiotics. There's a limit to how many molds there are, how many of these various natural killers or natural anti-pathogens that there are. Not quite sure how many there are, but there's a limit out there somewhere, the researchers tell us. Whether it's 50, 100, or 200, there's a limit. And they're approaching that limit. That's the purpose of this report to you. They're approaching that. And I mentioned to you last time, I said, you know, we have always in our lifetimes, at least in Georgie Gordon's lifetime, we have always had this ace up our sleeve. No matter what disease we get, there's an antibiotic out there that's going to kill it. But now we're getting to the point where there are some super bugs out there that nothing will kill it. I mean, nothing. You can get AIDS, and there's nothing that's going to kill that virus. Now, if there is something, which, by the way, there is, but it's not in the arsenal of the average medical doctor, so he doesn't know what to do for that. And we call that an incurable disease. And Dr. Schultz, remember I mentioned him to you last time, and I said, now get his catalog. Doesn't cost anything. It's free. And most of you won't, because that takes too much time, effort, or energy. But the reason I suggested Schultz's catalog is because in the catalog, he has a process called the incurables. Incurables. All diseases are curable. All 450 diseases are curable. It's just a matter of, do you know how to cure it? And medicine, you know, modern medicine, they'll tell you, well, we don't know how to cure cancer. But cancer has 10 cures. Did you know that? Cancer is one of those diseases that's relatively easy to cure. It's even easier to avoid. And I'd like to suggest that you avoid cancer. But if you get cancer, that's not curtains. You know, it's not the end of the line. Anyway, he calls it the incurables formula. incurables. When you get a disease that's incurable. Now, there's a problem with the incurables, and that is it relies upon your immune system. Natural healing aids your natural immune system. So when God designed your body, He designed it with an automatic pilot, an automatic process by which your body will heal itself. And that's why you have white corpuscles and tonsils and adenoids and appendix and thyroids and things like that. There are certain organs in your body that are designed for this immune system to help your body recuperate. And there are certain vitamins, minerals, and nutrients that your immune system needs in order to operate at 100% efficiency, or 90% or 80%, you know, somewhere up there where it can actually function and do something. So I mentioned to you last time, now you just picture this. You walk into a party and you're having a good time, and there's a guy in there who's got the flu or cold or something, and he's sneezing and he's hacking and whacking and coughing, and right away you say to yourself, now why did that guy come to this party? He knows, or he should know, that he is a disease packer. He should have stayed home. He should have quarantined himself, but he didn't. And he comes to the party, and sure enough, the next day or two or three, you come down with a cold or the flu. And who do you blame? Well, you blame the guy that was the disease packer, don't you? Well, that old John, he came to the party, and he gave me his cold. All right. You know what the fallacy of that logic is? And that is, you can go to all of the other people that went to that party, and they didn't get sick, and they were exposed to the same sneezes and the same germs that you were. So why didn't they get sick? And the answer is, well, all of those people that didn't get sick, their immune system warded it off because they were all exposed to the same bacteria, the same germs, same viruses. And the only time that you get sick is when your immune system gets weak. Your immune system gets weak. And it gets weak from two causes, either nutritional deficiency or toxins. You're poisoning yourself or you're starving yourself. So let's suppose that you come down with the flu or something, and you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, what you've got here is this infection, so I'm going to give you a shot of penicillin. So he does. Maybe it even turns into pneumonia. I've had pneumonia 3 times in my life. And each time that I got pneumonia, the doctor would give me penicillin. And it worked. Well, if it didn't work, it didn't hurt. You know, you can't really say that it was the penicillin that cured me, but, you know, I was feeling real poorly, and the doctor shot me up with penicillin, and I started feeling a little better. And then over time, I felt a lot better, and then I quit taking the penicillin. So I gave credit to the penicillin for having cured the pneumonia. Now, boys and girls, there was pneumonia before there was penicillin, and there were survivors from pneumonia. Not everybody died. A lot did. Fewer people die today from pneumonia than did as a percentage of the population that gets pneumonia than they did, say, 100 years ago or 200 years ago. So, you know, you can give credit to the medical practitioners or the medical profession for that. Now, I think penicillin, you know, or antibiotics on the scale of, and I gave you these 6. I said, first of all, I don't think penicillin is as good as your immune system. But it's certain that it does aid your immune system by killing a lot of the bad bugs and giving your white corpuscles an opportunity to get ahead of them and then throw them out. There are healing herbs, I think, that are better. Colostrum will aid in building your immune system. Raw garlic is a natural antibiotic, which isn't you can't take too much garlic, and the garlic doesn't become immune. In other words, the bacteria don't become immune to the garlic like they do penicillin. And then there's colloidal silver, which kills bacteria on contact. And then the healing oils of the Bible, of which there's of these healing oils, 32 of them are mentioned in the Bible, but there's about 100 and some odd healing oils. And each one of these oils, by the way, has certain minerals or certain vitamins or certain enzymes in it that aid your immune system. And keeping your immune system up to snub, you know, keeping that up to its maximum, is your number one job. That's why you eat, by the way. Now, most people, they go to McDonald's and they eat because it tastes good. And so their experience in life is that of a gourmet, and so they're eating the fries. My daughter says there's just nothing like McDonald's French fries. I guess that's true. I don't know. I guess you could be a gourmet heroin addict. Oh, God, there's just nothing like heroin, or just nothing like cocaine, or nothing like marijuana or something. You know, if you're a gourmet taster or tester, you know, I guess maybe that's probably true. But it doesn't mean that everything that you stick in your mouth or stick in your arm or stick up your nose is necessarily good for you. It's just it feels good or it smells good or tastes good or something like that. So the bottom line is, now as we get into the next phase of our report, is that the dangers of drug-resistance bacteria are with us now, and when the penicillin fails, what are you going to do to take its place? And that's what the medical researchers are in a quandary over. The people at the CDC, you know, are just beside themselves wondering, oh my God, we don't know what we're going to do. I do. I'm not too concerned about it. I avoid these antibiotics. I don't buy meat out of the grocery store for the express purpose of it that's filled with these antibiotics. And someday maybe I might need that antibiotic. There might come a time in my life when, again, I need this penicillin to cure me of pneumonia. My body gets weak for some reason, and I develop pneumonia. Now I've got to have this quick fix called penicillin. I'd like to have that ace up my sleeve. But it has been taken away from most Americans. And probably, you know, if you're a Western liver, you know, you've been living in Germany or France or maybe in England or Canada or someplace. If you're anything like we are, you've been pouring it right into your livestock, and you're probably just about as antibiotic tolerant as you can get. So when something really serious comes up and you go to the doctor and you say, hey, doc, I'm feeling kind of poorly, he says, hey, listen, let me give you this bacteria or let me give you this antibiotic to kill that bacteria. And it doesn't work. And that's what happened to this young Marine. They gave him antibiotics. They gave him everything they could think of. And he died. And it's kind of tragic. He survived his war wounds and he died to this because of this little bug. Now, on December 11th, 2006, when antibiotics arrived 60 years ago, many experts thought that it was the beginning of the end for infectious diseases. Sadly, they were wrong. Infections caused by viruses, fungi, and other assorted critters never respond to antibiotics. All right, now when you get a cold or the flu, you go to the doctor, what does he give you? He gives you an antibiotic. It's because you expect it, and he has a wife and kids to support, and so he needs to give you something. Antibiotics don't harm you. They may do you some good. And you pay your money, you walk out of there, and I got to tell you a little story right here. One time I came in from the woods, and I had a cold. Oh, God, I was feeling bad. Really bad. I went over to the C&V market, and I think I bought every cold remedy they had. I bought Vicks NyQuil, and I bought aspirin, and I bought this and that, and Alka-Seltzer. I must have spent $20. You know, this is about 50 years ago. I probably spent $20, which in those days was a day's pay. $20 a day is what I was working for, and I think I spent $20 on all this stuff. I went home. And I started taking that stuff. I was taking the NyQuil. I was taking the Alka-Seltzer. I was taking the aspirin. And I was taking this and that and another thing. And this went on through Saturday and Sunday. And you know, on Monday morning, I felt just as bad as I did on Friday. Felt just as bad. Didn't do anything for me. Didn't harm me. I didn't feel any better. I didn't feel any worse. So it taught me a lesson. I said, you know, when you get a cold and you're feeling real bad, you can do absolutely nothing, and in about a week's time, it goes away. Which, in this case, it finally went away. Or you can go spend $20, and you can suck all this stuff down, and you can feel real bad for about a week, and then in about a week, it'll all go away. So I said, well, I think I can just sit there and tough it out and save the $20, and it'll go away. So I've never bought any of that stuff since. Never wasted another dime on it. But, again, it didn't harm me. It didn't hurt me. And when you go to the doctor, you know, you expect this guy to do something for you. And he expects that you're expecting him to do something for you. But I think all of you know that when you've got the flu or a cold, antibiotics don't do anything for you. And that's because there isn't anything to be done. It's a toxic condition, and until your body can throw all those toxins, those poisons out, which takes a certain amount of time, a week, why, you're going to feel bad. It's called the detoxification process. So, you know, once you get that through your head, you try to avoid that. He goes on to say here, new foes such as bird flu crop up, and even bacteria, the true targets of antibiotics, have found ways to beat the rap. In most cases, they change their genes to thwart antibiotics. Smart scientists fight back by creating new drugs, but more often than not, the bugs, the bacteria, find a way to give them the slip. To see how it works and what we can do about it, consider three important bugs that have recently found new ways to make us sick. The first is called Staph aureus, A-U-R-E-U-S, which has been part of the human condition since the beginning of recorded history. This bacterium's natural habitat is the human nose. At any one time, at least 25% of us harbor the germ. In most, it's a harmless fellow traveler. But it often travels from nose to hand to skin, where it causes pesky boils and infects ingrown hairs and nails. And in a very unlucky few people, staph causes devastating infections of the blood and organs. These were highly lethal until penicillin came along. The drug was dramatically effective, but the bug rapidly changed its genes to produce penicillase, an enzyme that chews up the antibiotic. Penicillin-resistant strains appeared first in hospitals, then they spread to the community. By now, 95% of staph shrug off penicillin. All right, so there's your first one. Well, now, science comes along and says, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll come up with a new antibiotic, and we'll call it Aeromycin. And then the staph does the same thing to that one, and dihydrostreptomycin and terramycin and so on. And so as you go through all of these antibiotics, pretty soon you get down to where you're just down to the last two now. I think there's two that are still effective against nearly everything. Not quite everything, but nearly everything. And we're getting to the point where new antibiotics are not on the drawing boards. See? There aren't any new ones out there. You're down to your last two bullets. And when we fire these two bullets, that's the end of it. And there's still 450 of these enemies out here. You're still facing the same 450 enemies. And you're down to your last two bullets. Now, how does that make you feel? So in responding to the growing problem, researchers developed penicillase proof antibiotics. The first was in 1959, and it was methicillin. And a family of related drugs soon followed. But by 1960, methicillin-resistant staph aureus began to crop up in hospitals. By now, it constitutes the majority of strains in some hospitals and has also exploded into the community. Now, I'm going to put a bracket around that and remind you that where do these antibiotic-resistant strains come from first? Hospitals. And why do you think that they develop their immunity to these antibiotics in hospitals? Is it because that's where you find the most antibiotics, is right there in the hospital? Now, we think of hospitals as being sterile and pristine, and we think of doctors, you know, scrubbing down, and they're holding their hands up in the air, and the soap and water is dripping off their elbows, you know, and we think of real cleanliness. Now, the truth of the matter is, these hospitals harbor these disease pathogens. Remember in the last report, we were talking about Senator McCain. You know, he went in to visit this guy, and they walked out, and they're passing around the hand gel, you know, the disinfectant, you know. And that's because hospitals are full of germs. They're not only full of germs, they're full of real lethal germs, real nasty germs. You know, you'd be better off going out here in your garden and getting dirt under your fingernails. There's bugs and bacteria and germs out there, all right, but your immune system can deal with those, just like your immune system deals with this staph infection or this staph bacteria in your nose. You don't walk around real concerned now, are you, that you've got this staph in your nose? Germs are everywhere. They're in your gut, they're in your eyeballs, they're in your nose, they're in your ears, they're on your hands. Germs are everywhere. So get used to it. They're designed that way. And your body's immune system is designed to take care of the bad germs and husband and garner the good germs. And if your body's in balance, everything works fine. It's kind of like your kitchen faucet. As long as the kitchen faucet works and you turn it on, there's water there. Until one day you go to the kitchen faucet and you lift up the handle and it don't work. And then panic sets in, doesn't it? It's like you flip the switch and there's no electricity. So you rush to the telephone, you call the power company. I've never once, I'm an old man, 60, pushing 70, now I'm almost 70. I never called the power company once. In my lifetime, I've never called the power company. When the power goes off, I don't call the power company. And do you know the power has always gone back on? I bet you I've lived through 100 power outages. In my lifetime, never called the power company once, and the power company has always figured out that the power was off and turned it back on, went out and fixed it, all by themselves. Never had little Georgie Gordon to report to him a single time. And I'll bet you, over the next 100 years, if I never report a power outage, that the power company will figure out that the power is out and come out and fix it. All by themselves, without any help from me whatsoever. Isn't that just special? But, you know, most people, they get real excited, and they rush to the telephone, they call the power company. Oh, the power's out! The power's out! You know, what are we going to do? You're going to sit in the dark until the juice comes back on. That's what you're going to do. There isn't anything that you're going to do that's going to change it. There's nothing you're going to do that's going to change staph bacteria or germs. Hell, they've been around for thousands of years, and they're going to be around long after you're gone. What you're concerned is what am I going to do here with these germs get ahead of me? And up until now, you've had penicillin, but, you know, penicillin's been taken away from you. So you got to have another solution. So that's why I said, I gave you six here. Healing oils of the Bible, colloidal silver, raw garlic, colostrum, healing herbs, and your immune system. Those are the six defenses. Six natural defenses. Been here for thousands of years. And they work. They've worked for thousands of years. And the bacteria never develop a resistance to the healing oils of the Bible. They never develop a resistance to colloidal silver. They never develop a resistance to raw garlic, colostrum, or healing herbs. They never develop a resistance to your immune system. Because that's what these six defenses were designed by God to do. Now, he gave you what you needed. Kind of reminds me of this old story. There's a guy, there's a big flood out here. So he's up on the roof of his house, and this guy comes by in a boat. And he says, hey, jump in the boat. And he says, oh, Jesus will save me. So the guy with the boat leaves. And pretty soon another guy comes by with a boat. And he says, hey, jump in, and I'll save you. He says, oh, no, Jesus will save me. And so he goes away. Pretty soon a helicopter flies over. He comes down, he hovers, says, grab on to the rope. And the guy says, oh, no, Jesus will save me. And so the helicopter flies off. The flood comes up, washes his house away. The guy dies. He goes up to the pearly gates, and now he's in heaven. And here's St. Peter, and he says, well, I was waiting for Jesus to save me, and that's what happened to me. That's why I'm dead. And he asks St. Peter, he says, how come Jesus didn't come and save me? And he said, well, he sent you two boats and a helicopter. You know, oftentimes I chuckle a little bit, you know. God's given you six solutions here to your problem, you know, and so you got this tunnel vision. The only thing you can see is penicillin out here, or antibiotics. And I'm not really sure that people over here are paying attention to what's out here and what's available to them. So when these antibiotics are taken away from you, sit back and relax, just like the power company. The power company will turn it back on. Just sit back and relax. Your immune system will work automatically. Your immune system will know exactly what's wrong with your body, and it will go out and fix it without any help from you whatsoever. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, daily, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order one, just call the Law School and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And the reason for that is that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back. We're talking about antibiotics. And I'm telling you that there is life after antibiotics. But to give you a little sense of what you're up against in the event of that, and most of you are going to sit there and say, well, that's all well and good, Mr. Gordon, and I've heard this story before. I read it in the Reader's Digest, and I'm sure you did. If you've read anything at all, you've read stories about antibiotic-resistant bugs over the past 50 years. I've read many, many, many stories about it. And yet, I'm kind of surprised by the number of people that seem to be ignorant about what we're going to do about it when antibiotics fail us, which they inevitably will, like modern medicine always has in the past and always will in the future fail us at the critical moment. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, modern medicine does work certain times, at certain ways, and certain methodologies. For instance, you know, let's suppose that some woman is in labor and this baby is turned around backwards and it won't come out, and so we have a thing called a cesarean section. And modern medicine goes in with a cesarean, takes the baby out through the stomach, and saves the woman's life, and saves the baby, and we all jump up and down and say, wow, modern medicine has come to the rescue. Now, 35% of births in the United States are done by cesarean section, which I would contend doesn't have anything to do with saving people's lives. It has to do with making more money, because a cesarean costs $5,000 to $10,000,
and natural childbirth cost $500 to $1,000, and so therefore, I think the reason we have 35% of them being born in the hospital operating room, it has to do with money rather than saving lives. And there will come an end to that at some point in time, and one of these days maybe you'll be in that jam, lady, and you'll be pregnant and having a baby and or being in labor and you'll be having a baby and there won't be any hospital. Now what are you going to do? Well, my old granny, you know, she delivered my Aunt Bessie by herself. And I've noticed that cows down here in the pasture, they deliver those calves all by themselves. You know, giving birth is a natural process that you don't need any help whatsoever. You know, it's like going to the bathroom. You know, do you need your doctor or surgeon to go in there and wipe you when you go to the bathroom, ladies? Or can you do that all by yourself? Now, we've gotten to the point where we don't think that childbirth can be accomplished by yourself. I think if you went out and asked the average woman, you know, do you think you could have a baby by yourself, they'd all answer no. That is impossible. There, let's see if that's better. Drink a little water there. Now, the same thing is true here with modern medicine. You know, if you got cancer, do you think you could cure that cancer by yourself? Oh, God, no, I got to go to the doctor. Well, the doctor's already told you he can't cure it. And he's got about another 400 diseases out there he can't touch. He can treat. We don't deny that. He can treat diabetes, but you know they can't cure it. Did you know you can cure that diabetes? I know it sounds heretical, you know, when you say, well, you can cure diabetes. I just wanted to throw that out there to you. That's why I suggested that you get Schultz's book. Now, get your pen and paper out here. I'm going to give you his number again. To order, you call 1-800-HERB-DOC, and that's spelled H-E-R-B. H-E-R-B. For all of you non-spellers out there like me. 1-800-HERB-DOC. And he's actually got a real number in here. I turned the page, I think it was yesterday, and I gave you the real number. Yeah, here it is. It's 1-800-437-2362. I tried to call one day. You know, I've got one of these letter-type phone numbers. I think it took me 10 minutes to dial it. You know, when you don't spell very well and you're looking at the telephone, you test it. You know, just get on the telephone over there and start looking for, let's see, I got it. Now, the 1-800, I can do real good, you know. But then when I get to the H, you know, which number corresponds with the H? It's almost like a code, you know. I kind of prefer having the number. It's 437-2362. 1-800-437-2362. Just tell Schultz, you know, just call him on the phone. Say, send me your catalog. Would you do that? They send them to me free of charge. I don't know if it's because I'm special, but it's about, I don't know, 60, 70 pages. And he's just got all kinds of neat ideas and formulas. He's trying to sell you something, 66 pages. You don't have to buy it. But the purpose for it, you'll have it, you see. You'll have it on hand. And then when this thing comes down on you, like this bug came down on this young Marine, these people didn't know what the hell to do next. And his mother, you know, she's sitting there saying, oh, they never told us. We didn't know. Yeah, but the young man's dead. And then you're not going to bring him back until the second resurrection, lady. And that's 1,000 years down the line, you know. You've got to wait 1,000 years for this young man to live again. You know, that's kind of a long time. I would suggest let's try to stay alive as long as possible, and I think Dr. Schultz over here can help you. The second book that I wanted to promote, and keep in mind that I'm not promoting these because I write them or because I get paid a commission. I get paid for doing these reports. I don't get paid for selling books. But boy, I read a lot of books. And when I read a book and I learn something new, I like to share it with somebody else. I'm an evangelist. I like to go out here and evangelize and tell you about the utter truth. U-D-D-E-R is the way you spell that. The utter truth. About colostrum, spelled C-O-L-O-S-T-R-U-M. Now, this colostrum, you can buy this stuff across the counter in the health food store. It'll cost you an arm and a leg. But it's worth the arm and a leg. And there's other places to get it. Now, you could go to any dairy farmer and get some colostrum. First milk. It's the first 3 days of milk comes out of a cow. It's full of antibodies and all kinds of neat stuff. And this neat stuff is good for humans, too. It builds your immune system. That's the purpose behind it. When God designed this stuff, I think he had something in mind. And it's written by a book, this book is written by a guy named William E. Frazier. And look at this. He's got an MHP. I haven't got a clue as to what an MHP is. A CNC. I haven't got a clue as to what a CNC is. And then he's got an ND. Now, I know what that is. That's a naturopathic doctor. So, Frazier is an MHP CNCND. Now, you know this guy's got to know something. Not just a crummy plumber. All right. Now, the book tells you all of the ins and outs of colostrum, answers all the questions that you might have about colostrum. It's the only book I've ever seen that does that. I've seen other books on colostrum, and they tell you to take it. The presumption when you read these books a lot of times is like religion. The presumption is, well, you've already read the Bible, and you already know all about it. And so the purpose for this sermon this Sunday is just to remind you about Isaiah 27:14. And so the preacher, he just zeroes in on Isaiah 27:14. And he's got his points, and he sits there and he gets up and spouts off for an hour, bores everybody to tears, and he didn't really have anything to say, but he presumes that you've already read that. Hell, you couldn't find the book of Isaiah at high noon, on a clear day with a road map, most likely. And of course you've never read that and you don't know anything about it. Well, same thing's true with colostrum. You probably never even heard the name colostrum, don't know what it is or how it works or why. This book costs $10 and it'll tell you why. It'll tell you all about it and answer all your questions. It'll answer all the questions that you're going to develop after you read the book, because you don't have any questions today because you don't even know how to spell colostrum. I mean, if you're like me. Now, it's an immune system enhancer is what it does. It builds your immune system. And your immune system is your number one defense against disease. The first thing you want to do is forget about the antibiotics. I haven't had an antibiotic for 50 years. Well, that's a lie. 50. Yeah, 50 years. I think the last time I had one is about, I was about 18. Maybe I was 20. It's been close to 50 years. And I avoid antibiotics like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. I don't take my antibiotics when I eat at the restaurant. I try to avoid restaurant food and supermarket food. I mean, if it's got USDA approved on it, I know it's not fit for human consumption, so I avoid all of that right away. But the moral of the story is, when you get down to the bottom line, you're not going to avoid all of it all the time, and there might come a time when I actually need that antibiotic, and I want to keep that ace up my sleeve. For most of us, it's too late. In my case, maybe, just in case I might need one, it might be there. Anyway, compared with staph, this Clostridium difficile, C. diff they call it, is a newcomer. It was first diagnosed in 1978 when it appeared as an occasional cause of diarrhea in patients who were taking a particular antibiotic. By now, though, it is clear that virtually any antibiotic can trigger the problem. C. diff strikes at least 300,000 people in the United States every year, even some who haven't taken antibiotics. Many healthy people harbor a few C. diff among the millions of bacteria in the colon. When C. diff hangs out in the form of inert spores, it's harmless. But if antibiotic therapy knocks off the normal bacteria in your gut, C. diff springs to life, producing two toxins that attack the colon. Doctors can treat most cases by stopping the offending drug and prescribing, oh my God, metronidazole or vancomycin, oral antibiotics that trigger C. diff. But spore forms of the bug defy even these drugs, and diarrhea often recurs when treatment stops. Okay, pause. Put another big bracket around that one. Here's what these antibiotics do. They get into your system and they kill bacteria. Oh, God, do they kill bacteria. They kill the good ones, the bad ones, and the indifferent ones. They just kill anything that walks, moves, squirms. They kill it. And that's pretty good because, you know, you've got this pneumonia and you take the penicillin and it kills off the bad bugs and the good bugs and all the bugs. And we hope that in your natural state, you know, when we discontinue the penicillin, that your body will rebuild these bacteria. Sometimes they don't. Now, sometimes we need to call the vet. For instance, we had a cow get horned here pretty bad one time. And I took a look at the gash, and I said, well, that's going to require some real professional help. So I called Maine. He came out, and he sewed up the cow. Well, in the process, you know how these doctors are, he shoots her up with penicillin or antibiotics. And so this cow becomes very unthrifty. She healed up from the wound nicely. Just like the young Marine, he healed up from his war wounds quite nicely. But this cow is getting unthrifty. And her milk production goes down. And she's just sick as a dog, and she's just not doing real good, you know. And so my wife, you know, who once in a while, she says, hey, you, Gordon, you got gout, you know, and I got to go to the doctor, you know, and prove her wrong. So anyway, my wife says, okay, well, go out and get a pint of colostrum. Colostrum. I said, no, this isn't a calf, sweetheart. This is an old cow. And she said, go get the colostrum. So I went out and got the colostrum. We thawed it out, and we poured it into a ketchup bottle. See? And then we went out and put nose tongs in the cows, tied her up to a fence post over there, and we stuck this, very unnatural, stuck this ketchup bottle down the cow's throat and poured this colostrum into this old cow. She's about 14 years old. It was Old Clovers who it was. Not that I named my cows, but the children named the cows. So I put tags in their ears. She just owned number 19 to me, but it's Clover, Old Clover. And Old Clover, she's just fighting with all. She knew that was not natural. And so she's just fighting for all she's worth. But we poured that pint of colostrum down Old Clover's gullet, and a miracle happened. A miracle, I tell you. She got onto her feed, and she started eating. She started putting on weight. She started giving more milk. And everything just turned out fine. And Old Clover, last I heard, now sold her not too long ago, but last I heard, Old Clover is still producing calves. She must be 16 years old by now. Still producing calves and producing milk and doing fine. And what happened here was Old Clover, she got this antibiotic in her. And as a result of this antibiotic, it killed off the good bacteria and she couldn't digest her food. You got to have this bacteria down in your gut to digest your food. Without it, the food just passes through you, and you're starving to death. You got to have that. You got to have them bugs. So when we reintroduced that bacteria into her stomach and into her colon and so on, she got her natural bacteria back into balance. And that's what they're telling you right here. That these antibiotics oftentimes kill off the good guys, and then this is called side effects. See? Side effects. All drugs are poisons, and all poisons have side effects. So it kills off the pneumonia, but it also kills off the other stuff as well, and then you get this side effect over here, and then now what are we going to do? All right, so what you do is you take colostrum, and you can get that at the health food store. And a pinch. If it was me, I'd go to some guy with a cow, you know. I'd say, hey, next time you have a cow come fresh, I'd like to buy that colostrum from you. And, you know, you just go ahead and buy it. And I don't know what you're going to pay for, $20 a pint or whatever, you know. Stick it in your freezer. Now, for humans, see, you don't have to take a whole pint. I mean, you can take a tablespoon or two of that. The way we do it here, we just take a pint of it. I put it in pint jars, you know, and freeze it. And then you just thaw out a pint of it, and you take a couple tablespoons, and you stick it in with a glass of milk and put some Ovaltine in it, kill the taste. And you drink it down with the Ovaltine milk, and you never know it's there. You know, things that are good for you taste bad, you know, like broccoli, you know, and then cauliflower, that nasty stuff. I can understand why George Bush, you know, doesn't like broccoli, because it tastes bad. So what I do is I take my broccoli, And I mix it with balsamic vinegar. So I have a separate bowl, and I put the broccoli into the bowl, and I pour balsamic vinegar over, and it kills the taste of the broccoli, and the balsamic vinegar doesn't taste too bad. And then you can get it down. Kind of like putting cream and sugar over strawberries. Evidently, they're not too tasty, you know, without cream and sugar. A little shortcake on there, a little whipped cream, you know, on the top of it. And so you kind of doctor this stuff up, you know. You ever stop and think, you know, if you doctor this stuff up, you know, you can get it down. Colostrum's like that. I don't know how this colostrum tastes, you know, in its natural form. I never have tasted it. It always looks so bad to me and so nasty that I didn't think that a human being could get that stuff down. So I've always doctored it and killed the taste of it. Hell, it might even taste good. I don't know. Give it a try and then send me a report and tell me. All right, so now with that out of the way, the next threat is a novel high-virulent strain of C. diff that produces 16 to 23 times more toxin than its predecessors. Because the bug is so new, doctors have not yet determined if revised treatment guidelines are warranted. This new and dangerous form of C. diff makes it even more urgent that people with diarrhea or people caring for people with diarrhea scrupulously wash their hands with soap and water after any possible contact with the infected material to avoid spreading the germ or becoming infected themselves. That makes good sense. Good hygiene. Now wash your hands. Use that germicide on her. I thought my wife was kind of nutty. You know, everywhere she goes, you know, she's got this germicide. We went into the restaurant the other day, and we sat down with this big bottle of germicide in the middle of the table. And every time she gets up and goes to the buffet, she comes back and she washes her hands, you know. And she's kind of got a fetish for these bugs. The next threat is a novel high-virulent strain. Finally, there's tuberculosis. TB. I remember TB years and years ago. I used to go in and get a chest x-ray every year, see if you got TB. Well, they quit doing that. You know, you got to admit, you know, modern medicine, you know, has come up with, you know, some neat processes and programs. TB used to be a big-time killer, and of course, nobody ever thought about building their immune systems with healing herbs, colostrum, raw garlic, colloidal silver, or healing oils of the Bible, so they got tuberculosis. And as a result of that, they did not cure it. And so they died from it. And then some guy woke up in the healing profession. He says, well, I got this way to cure this, and we got these antibiotics, and we got these drugs over here, so they cure TB. You know, you can't take away, you know, the successes that the medical profession has come up with. Now, there was TB from the Garden of Eden forward, and there's TB today. And there's always been TB, and there's always been a cure for TB. Tuberculosis has always had a cause and effect, and it's always had a cure. And medical, modern, you know, ancient man, middle-aged man, modern man, they don't know what the hell to do with it. I do. So, if I had TB, I probably wouldn't go to the doctor anyway. I would probably treat it right here. I would probably treat it with my immune system, number one, and then healing herbs, colostrum, raw garlic, colloidal silver, and healing oils of the Bible. But I just thought I'd point this out, that there's finally tuberculosis. Now, this TB is getting to be a real problem, because once they conquered TB with antibiotics, or with whatever drug they use, I don't know if it's antibiotics they're using on TB. It might be something else. But they got something. And it has worked. From about 1950 until today, it has worked. Now, this TB is a historic scourge of humankind. Even now, it is the leading infectious cause of death in the world. Oh, my God. I got to underline that one. Did you know that? Did you know that tuberculosis is the leading infectious cause of death? Now, you've heard of malaria, haven't you? And AIDS, and gonorrhea, and syphilis. Did you know that tuberculosis causes more deaths in the world, worldwide, than any other infectious disease? Okay, well, now you're smarter today than... Now you got something to talk about over dinner tonight. It accounts for more than 2 million deaths a year. 2 million people a year die from tuberculosis because they don't know about their immune system, healing herbs, colostrum, raw garlic, colloidal silver, or healing oils of the Bible. But they do know about modern allopathic medicine. They do know about that. And they want to go to the doctor. Well, here's the bad news. Now, we've been much luckier in this country. As a result of improved social and economic conditions, the incidence of TB began to decline around 1900 and nearly disappeared with the discovery of an anti-TB drug in mid-century. But in 1984, an alarming upturn developed, and it was fueled by HIV and homelessness. I'm not quite sure what homelessness has to do with TB, but this author seems to think homelessness causes TB. And it featured a rise in multi-drug-resistant MDR-TB. Ordinarily, TB can be cured by 6 months of combined therapy, but MDR strains defy the standard drugs. In this country, TB plateaued in 1992 and has declined steadily since because of aggressive diagnosis and strict isolation of cases. Still, there is no room for complacency. In 2006, doctors in South Africa identified a new, extensively drug-resistant XDR strain of TB. So far, it has been confined to AIDS patients in South Africa, but it's a small world, and infections respect no borders. And we need new drugs for TB, but we also need to use the resources that we already have to deliver medical care to the developing world. If we fight the war against TB on that turf, we may not have to fight it on our own turf. Kind of like George Bush, you know, he says, let's go fight them terrorists over in Iraq so we don't have to fight them in California. All right, so there's that report. And by the way, that report comes from www.msnbc. Oh, my God. Maybe I shouldn't have read you that report. Let me see if I made a mistake here. No, sometimes this MSNBC says, don't you dare repeat a word of this, because if you do, we will sue you. But on this particular document, they didn't do that. So I guess I'm all right reporting that one to you. But I wanted to give you the credits. It was msnbc.msn.com, dated 4/8/2007. You've probably heard that 1,000 times. Nothing big there. But the thing that makes it big is this. Tuberculosis is coming back with these new resistant, drug-resistant strains. And one of these days, we're going to be faced with TB just like the super gonorrhea bug, or just like these staph infections that don't have a cure, don't have an antibiotic that you can use against them. Then what are you going to do? Well, the answer is healing oils of the Bible, colloidal silver, raw garlic, colostrum, healing herbs, and your immune system. But not in that order. Your immune system is number one. Well, we're reaching the end of the line here for the time we've been allotted, so I'm going to have to give you a reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.